Welcome to the Dr. Drew Podcast. We do appreciate you telling a friend. We appreciate the word of mouth that spreads these pods. I appreciate you supporting the people that allow us to, you know, support the podcast and keep the winds in the sail of the Corolla pirate ship here. And it really is a privilege to do these things. So if you have shows you'd like to hear or things that you'd like me to get into or people you'd like to hear me interview, we're taking recommendations, believe me. And today is a caller show. We like doing caller shows. You know, we get to just sort of answer questions, do it almost like the old Loveline way, except the calls tend to be a little more diverse than back then. I just did a little sort of one-minute clip for all the Corolla social media about – we do these little sort of medical minute things. And there's a really interesting thing coming out in breast cancer just now, which is there was a study out of Vanderbilt that showed that you may be able to treat – breast cancer with a hormone-blocking agent, much like we do prostate cancer. And the relationship between prostate cancer, ovarian cancer, and breast cancer is really getting very interesting in that the research for one is bearing fruit for the others. And right now, the potential to be able to sort of dial in specific therapies for specific genetic markers for a given tumor are just really getting very exciting. I had the privilege of hosting this cancer survivor thing. It was Cancer Survivor Day recently, and we were talking to some of the oncologists, and the stuff they're doing is amazing. And I think right now, the history of right now is going to, when the books are written, the most elegant discoveries is we have ways now that the, you know, your tumors have to grow in such a way that your immune system doesn't see them, right? And so they're now blocking agents called checkpoint inhibitors that sort of make the tumors again visible to your immune system. So I imagine a day when things like a hormone agent and a checkpoint inhibitor could really be an interesting combination. Gary, I did a – oh, shoot. It's probably on my website at doctor.com. It actually was a You Live This Life podcast I did with Matthew Rettig. You guys may want to look for that, R-E-T-T-I-G. And he's an oncologist researcher and went into some of that – a lot of detail about these checkpoint inhibitor types thing. All right, let's get to some calls here. Let's get to Mike. Let me see. Hold on a second, Mike. Let me try to get this up here. There we are. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Drew. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
You bet.
So I have, since I was a little kid, always had soda. And Diet Coke is kind of my poisonous pill.
Yeah.
And I know that I'm absolutely addicted to it, and every time I try to get off of Diet Coke and caffeine, it just goes bad for me.
In what way? What do you mean it goes bad?
Well, I get a real bad headache, and I just feel just like crap for the longest time, to the point where if I don't go get a, you know, I mean, I drink those 64-ounce super double gulp things, and eventually the headache will subside. It takes a while, but I mean, I can't go, you know, more than 24 hours without having a Diet Coke.
Huh.
And so I, you know, and I hear you and Adam and Vinny talking about the NSGS diet, or
yeah,
no sugar, no grain diet.
Yeah.
And I am really interested in it, but I know drinking that Diet Coke is just going to screw it up. And so I guess I'm looking for, what does that really do? You know, how bad is that really for you? Because I read,
well,
some places it's good, sometimes it's not. And then how is that going to screw up if I try that diet? What's
all
the best
right
way to get off of that caffeine thing?
Well, I'm not sure there's a – I mean, cold turkey is, I would say, for sure the best way if you can do it. But you sounds like you – you know, oh boy. Is there anything you can do for the headaches? Like take Tylenol or anything that makes them manageable? Because they should only last a couple of days.
You know, I can take aspirin and maybe have a, you know, a cup of coffee or something. But, you know, really it's – I think it's, you know, it sounds strange, but it's almost like it's psychosomatic too, where if it's the soda, because I can drink those sparkling waters every once in a while, and that, you know, relieves it for a little bit. But I just think it's something in the chemicals of the diet. I don't know. I'm just, you know, guessing.
The only thing you really, I mean, look, Diet Coke, if it were really seriously problematic, don't you think in this litigious society we live in, you'd see maybe a couple lawsuits against Coca-Cola? A big deep pocket like that. You don't think if there's even the remotest possibility of something serious that they'd go after it with both guns, right?
No, you're right.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's nothing serious. The data that I've seen that is legitimate is that it tends to stimulate your appetite more than you realize. You feel like it's curbing your appetite, but the data suggests that particularly in diabetics, it makes you gain weight. So that's the concern.
Yeah.
And particularly the Splenda, if I remember right, one of them was worse. I think the Splenda was worse as it pertains to that particular data. But I drink Diet Coke. I mean, it's hard for me, judge not lest I be judged. I drink Diet Coke. It does not affect the NSNG diet at all to me. I mean, I've had this massive response to it. And I wouldn't believe it if it's been so good for me. I don't even want to talk about it because I'm fearful that I'm having some kind of idiosyncratic reaction, that it's just my body and my physiology. But man, it's been really exceptional. So I wouldn't worry about it too much. Why don't you just be reasonable and cutting back? How about that? And maybe replace some of it with sparkling water or something else you like, huh?
Okay.
All right.
I'll give it a shot.
All right, Mike.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Good luck.
Okay.
All right. This is Joe. Joe, what's going on there?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
It's just a guy, just me. It's Drew.
Oh, hey, Drew. How you doing, man?
Good. What's up?
Hey, so I'm 53, and I haven't really been to a real doctor for a while.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think about this while I was on hold the last time I've been to a doctor. I think my wife's life insurance made me get a blood test about 3 years ago. Found I had high cholesterol, so I went to Zoom Care. I don't know if you have those down there, but it's basically, doc in a box type thing. And I had been on high cholesterol and hypertension medicine since then, and they have been reissuing it every so often.
Yeah.
But I'd like to go back and see a real doctor, and I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, at 53, you've got to start, you're already overdue for your cancer screening, right? I mean, it is time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're in my head every morning I wake up. Got to get that colonoscopy. I don't know where to go.
Yeah. Word of mouth is always a good place to start. Has there been anybody that's been recommended to you? For instance, when you brought up the colonoscopy, has anybody said, go see so-and-so?
No, that would be easy.
Okay. Because sometimes if you start with the subspecialist, they'll know the primary care guys, the generalists, that are really good. In fact, why don't you go that way? Why don't you go that route? Since I don't know the Portland landscape, that's where you're from.
How about even just the type of doctor? Like
internal medicine. Internal,
or GP,
yeah.
Or what?
No, internal medicine. You want an internist, for sure.
Oh, okay.
Sure. But I think the way I would do it, I would seriously do it this way. If you just ask around, go, who does your colonoscopies? Go make an appointment with that doctor. Get the clearance for the colonoscopy. Do the colonoscopy with him or her. And then ask for a referral. Who is a really good internist? They'll know, because that's how they get their referrals, and they get to interact with each other out in the the wards and things, and they'll know who's good. And you need somebody who is smart and attentive, and that's hard to find anymore. Some of that ends up being, unfortunately, the concierge service, right? Do you know what that is?
Yep.
Yeah, and so here's the way it usually breaks down. People are either not so bright and not so talented. Or they're very bright and very talented and therefore too busy and not really interested in just general medical screening. Or they're in a
they're in a
concierge system. So you kind of – if the gastroenterologist doesn't have anybody good to recommend to you, you're probably going to end up in a concierge setup, which is fine. I mean, it's just a little bit more every year, and they usually do a very good job.
Yeah, I remember the last time I tried to get a doctor. Nobody was taking
patients. Right. The good ones are too busy. That's right. That's usually what happens. And so thus we have the concierge system. Then you have to pay a little bit to get it. But I would start with the gastroenterologist. And by the way, that's that and a PSA are your two urgent needs right now, right? You got to get – you need your cholesterol checked, you need a PSA, and you need your colonoscopy, and you need it now. All right?
All right. Thanks so much.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You got it. Good luck. Let us deal with them. Trying to deal with people who have been on hold the longest here. This is Mike. What's up, Mike?
Dr. Drew, it's an honor. Thank you very much.
You bet. Of course.
So my girlfriend and I, my fiance and I, we were both sexually abused as children.
Oh, boy.
Her situation was a lot more severe.
Yeah.
At first she said it was her uncle, but I did some prying, and now I think it was her father. She will come out and say it.
Oh, boy.
I know. It was really bad. It was like when she was 16, and then she went into the foster system.
Oh, my God.
Very positive. Yeah. No,
wait, hold on. So her first incident of sexual abuse when she was a teenager?
Yes, if I understand it correctly, yes.
I'm going to wonder about that.
Well,
it happens.
Yeah,
but...
well, so here's what happened. Her mother raised her, but her mother raised her in, a very strict organization. She calls it a cult. It must have been some kind of a church or something. She was very, very closely monitored. But there's a lot of mystery about the way that she was raised, too. She told me that she thinks she may have spent some time in Libya, for goodness sake.
In where?
She was, like,
Libya?
Libya.
Wow.
Yes, below the age of five. Look, this is, it's just one thing after another when I explore her past.
Huh.
And I've had some interaction with the situation myself, but it doesn't hold a candle to her situation. So I sympathize very much for her, but it's very hard for me to be completely supportive without being suspicious somehow. I mean, there's drug abuse in her history as well, too. But she understands me very well. She and I both kind of have aggressive streaks sometimes. We don't hurt each other, of course, but...
Wait, Mike, you've said some very interesting things so far. So you said you're suspicious of what?
I'm concerned that she's going to slip into that kind of behavior between us.
What kind of behavior?
Controlling. She doesn't like that she was controlled when she was raised. I'm concerned that maybe she's going to be controlling her. Maybe
how long have you guys been together?
Well, since like early November. Not
and
all that
has
long.
There been any conflict, any problems?
Well, outside of the normal stuff, I don't think so. I mean, I've paid for a lot of the share of, like, you know, the rent and I haven't paid for her car, but, you know, I did help her get one. She's
okay.
Driven
all right.
Before.
So that's kind of weird. And then you said you had been sexually abused. Is that what you said? You said you've been through some of the same stuff?
Well, some of the same stuff. But like I said, it's not anywhere near as
what have you been through? What have you been through?
Well, when I was seven, I was taking like swimming lessons or something. And then I was invited over to a friend's house to go swimming. And the person offered swim lessons in the neighborhood.
You sure we're not getting into a mason jar situation here? You sure?
No, I swear to God, no. My brother and I, we were there at the pool, and he told us that we had to undress and shower before we got into the pool with him watching. And even as a seven-year-old, I thought that was a
all right, so something weird happened. All right. And had you ever been actually actively, you know, physically abused or sexually abused, in fact?
No, not
okay.
With like
all right, so you've never been through anything like that. And I'm always, all my spidey sense always go up whenever somebody else calls on behalf of another person going, oh, my God, what this person's been through is so terrible. It always raises questions. Sometimes it's, you know, there's lots of reasons for that. And it's some of those reasons.
Sure, that's
could fine. Huh?
That's totally fine. I'm very appreciative of the fact that you're
And so listen. One of the things that pops into my head when somebody calls on behalf of somebody else, and it's not hanging together for me, and I'm like trying to figure it out. I start wondering if the person you're worried about is fabricating some of this. And then you said, oh, my goodness, she's getting me to pay for my apartment and paying for maybe I'm going to pay for a car and all this stuff. I thought of thinking, oh, geez. Is it possible that she's making more of whatever has happened to her to manipulate you?
That's a little bit about what I'm concerned about, Dr. Newman. I don't know exactly how to sort it out either.
Well, just raising that possibility and being open to it is the first part. The second part is to put some limits on the spending. And if you start saying no to things and see what happens, you'll know real quickly. Does that make sense?
I have put some limits to things, and it has put some distance between us.
Yeah, see,
and
that's not normal. That's not normal. For you to want sort of normal boundaries, like, hey, I don't have to pay for everything. I'll pay for some stuff, but not everything. Then, by the way, screw you, or somehow that undermines the possibility of a relationship. Again, there are reasons for that. People get into that, but most of them reasons are not good. So I would just be – have you called before?
No, I haven't spoken. Like, I think I called Loveline once back, like a decade ago or something.
There's something about your meter that just sounds very familiar. It wasn't the same problem. It wasn't the same problem back then.
No. It's not a similar. No. Okay. I didn't even know her back then.
But I mean, this isn't a pattern for you of getting in with people that take advantage of you.
When I originally called 10 years ago, like, I was frustrated because I hadn't been in any relationships for a long time, precisely because I was scared of getting taken advantage of. But it had already been, like, you know, 6 or 7 years since I'd been in a relationship.
Weird, huh?
Then I called you guys. Pardon me?
Weird that that's what you were afraid of, and maybe that's not what's happening.
Well, yes, but Dr. Drew, then I'm at the end of my rope. I don't really know where to go, because part of the reason I want to marry her is because, okay, it might not be the perfect relationship, but at least I'm in a relationship. I really don't know what to say. I don't know how to fix that.
I'm not saying fix, and I'm not saying leave. I'm saying keep your eyes open and set some boundaries. That's all. And it sounds like it's a satisfying. Oh, I really feel like I've talked to you before about something similar, but
yeah.
It's a weird feeling. You know, and then keep working on the relationship. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of some stuff going on, and naturally there would be if indeed any part of what she's telling you is true, right? And she should be prickly in relationships. That would be normal after what she had. And what you would want if you're really going to be in a long-term situation with somebody like that, you want them to get treatment. I mean, she's not responsible for what's happened to her. I mean, this is my general rule of thumb. You are not responsible for what happened to you. You are not responsible for your illnesses. You are not responsible for your body and brain's reaction to what happened to you. You are responsible to make it better. You are responsible to get treatment. And, I think that's the main thing, is that she really takes care of herself and that you keep your eyes open. Just set gentle boundaries where it's appropriate. Mike, thanks so much, buddy. Appreciate your call. Well, our friends at Purple Mattress, that's right, it's a 100-night risk-free trial. You got to check it out. It's the founders of this are two brothers who have been developing cushioning technology for 30 years, things like medical beds and wheelchairs. And in 2016, they finally decided to use their patented comfort technology to create Purple. I love this mattress. We've got it at our house. It's different. Purple Mattress will probably be different than anything you've ever experienced because it uses this brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist. It's not like the memory foam you're used to. Purple material feels very unique. It's both firm and soft at the same time, so it supports while feeling really comfortable. It's supported where you need it. It's breathable and it's cool. I mean, it's literally cool because it's breathable, and so you stay cool at night. And again, there's a 100-night risk-free trial. If you're not fully satisfied, you can return your mattress for a full refund with free shipping and returns backed by a 10-year warranty. I mean, they really stand behind their product here because they know what they've got. They've got something good, something special, and you will like it. Free in-home setup, old mattress removal. Now, you're going to love Purple. And right now, my listener will get a free sheets and a free mattress protector with your mattress purchase. Just go to Purple, that's the color, purple.com/DREW. That is purple.com/Drew, purple.com/Drew. All right, help our podcast stay free to download with minimal ads. Responses will help us align at this Podcast One survey. Survey short, it's anonymous, takes no more than 5 minutes. Go to podcastone.com/mysurvey or go to podcastone and click on the survey banner. If you filled it out in the past, we do thank you, but we still need to do it again if you can. Do all of us at Coral Network and Podcast One a huge favor by filling it out. Thank you for supporting my program and taking the time to complete the survey. Really do appreciate it. It helps us align the appropriate advertisers to this audience and stay free to download. Here are some useful car tips you might not be aware of. Coffee filter and a bit of olive oil clean your interior. Get the excess weight out of your car. Improve your gas mileage. Why don't we think about that? Keep the proper tire pressure in your tires. Well, here's another tip you might not know, but I don't know where you've been if you don't. TrueCar helps people get used cars as well as new cars. With their TrueCar certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you will enjoy the TrueCar way, which is real pricing on actual inventory and a simpler buying experience, whether you're buying new or used. And with TrueCar users, you see what others paid, you see that scattergram, so you know you're getting a good deal. The price you lock in is for an actual vehicle on a TrueCar certified dealer's lot. They're also going to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with the TrueCar certified dealers. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, check out TrueCar for a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. Let's talk to Josh. Go ahead, Josh.
Oh, hey, Dr. Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
Listen, I was wondering what you thought about people, I won't say Trump, but I just say people that seem to lie, like you're just having a conversation with them and everything that comes out of their mouths, or, you know, if you're listening to the Trump tweets, they have, you know, the news are saying this is not true. And if you're having to deal with some like that, what's the sort of strategy?
Well, I think first you got to start distinguishing between lying and untruth or falsehood, right? Those are different things, correct?
Okay. No, can you explain that to me?
Lying is volitional. I'm trying to deceive you. Deception. Untruths are, I got the data wrong, or I'm not really caring about the data, or I'm just telling you as I understand it. Turns out not to be true. I don't care. Right? It's sort of loose with the facts.
If you feel like a fact has not been said or an untruth has not been said, we shouldn't be paranoid to think that the person is on purpose. Right? Is that what you're saying or no?
I'm saying you need to distinguish between the two. One, they're different.
Okay.
And I listened to Scott Adams to help me understand that, because he comes from this whole world of persuasion where facts don't matter at all. And that's not my world. So I have real trouble understanding it. I don't understand deceptions, and I understand argumentation from untruths or loose facts. I don't understand it. So it's very, very – I just get confused. And if it's a – relationship where people are lying, well, that has many different layers and problems. And, you know, every alcoholic addict lies, every, you know, narcissist lies, every sociopath lies. A lot of people lie in relationships without, you know, sort of just out of trying to survive or sort of cover for something disgraceful they've done. There's millions of reasons people lie in relationships, but I would urge people to really focus there. Really, that's where lies have the most impact on you, is in your interpersonal
right.
life, and it can be problematic. From politicians, I don't even know what to think anymore. I don't know what to think. By the way, same thing from the news media. I don't even know what the hell anymore. So I just sort of sit in amazement, trying to ferret out the facts. The facts as I understand them.
The way I look at it is the country's so divided. If you do take Trump as an example, because he's a good example of that, then you have people, one side saying, oh, no, he's not lying. The other part saying, what are you crazy? He's lying about everything.
And, yeah, so, both are
duality,
right. And both are wrong, right? Both are wrong.
I think the idea is that you say both are wrong. I would say both are fine in their own way. We should kind of go above both.
Oh, that's like I like that. I like that. I like your way. Because what I do is I go, look, I'm agnostic. I'm in the middle. Leave me out of it. Leave me alone. That's sort of my general note. Leave me alone. Although I have found because the problems, particularly in California, become so severe, I have found myself really moving, people pointed out to me, off my libertarian sort of rock that I thought I lived on, and I'm like, I want to solve this homelessness thing. I want to solve this suffering thing. I want to solve this, you know. And then people look at me and go, who do you want to solve that? The government? Is that a libertarian thing? I was like, God damn it. Well, okay. Well, I want to solve it. So
you think you can rise? I think you can rise above both without being like ostracized from society.
I hope so.
It's so polarized.
I know.
It's so polarized.
Yeah, I agree.
I think you can just say opposites attract and they cancel each other out and just say that's it.
Well, that you're kind of saying the same thing I am, but just hang out in the middle.
Yeah, so. Kind of, right.
All right, Josh, thanks, buddy. Appreciate
it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I feel better talking to you. This is interesting here. Let's go to Clint. Hey, Clint. Clint, are you there? Is that the right name or am I on the right line?
You're on the wrong line.
Okay, Clint, there you are.
Drew?
Hey.
Dr. Drew?
You're here. What's up?
Hey. I just had a question. My sister has had quite a few illnesses, kind of mysterious, in the past. And now she's talking about EDS. Oh. You know, really getting into the whole zebra movement.
The what kind?
And I was
what movement?
It's like zebra. I guess it's like the sisterhood or fellowhood of the EDS movement.
What's EDS?
Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
She has Ehlers-Danlos. So, but my thing is like, okay. So she wants support from. Does she have Ehlers-Danlos?
She says he does.
Okay,
she's
so
seen, you know, so, a dozen different doctors and never got any.
All right, so cancer. All right, so will she have a lot of joint complaints, that kind of thing?
She has in the past. Yes.
All right, so Ehlers-Danlos, it's a real thing, right? And it's a gigantic spectrum of diseases. Some of them are very severe, and some of them are very mild. But I like that she has a, you know, something she can hang her hat on. Now, I will tell you, I understand your concerns that she's going to start to get too into it and get focused on it and stuff. But it turns out in most situations where people feel marginalized or stigmatized or unfelt, getting active, like being proactive like this and being part of a group that advocates, tends to go very well. So rather than worrying so much about her, you know, her whole identity getting tied up in this, let's see if it doesn't help her feel empowered in some way. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah.
Yeah, and I can only tell you that from a standpoint of published data that's out there, that kind of thing tends to go well. Now, I understand you're in your note here, I'm reading, it says she's been what's called somatically preoccupied. She's had a lot of complaints and stuff and been sort of overly preoccupied of it. Has it always been about her joints?
No, it hasn't.
Okay.
In the past, she had a hysterectomy, and you know, it seems like it's always something.
All right,
horrible to say.
All right, so to me, that I always worry about some kind of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, that kind of thing, because people with abuse tend to be much more overwhelmed by what comes out of their body. And so while there might be an Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, how she experiences the misery from it is amplified because of some kind of trauma. Do you know whether that happened?
I don't. She's the only girl. There's three of us.
Yeah.
Brothers.
I think we're
fine.
The only other thing I would say is if she's going to get active and empowerment and that kind of stuff, make sure she also has a therapist and that somebody really looks at whether or not this is, you know, what this is. And whether it's trauma or something like that. And then you've got a pretty good situation in terms of her not spiraling out, right?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I was more asking from the family standpoint just because there's been so many things over a decade and a half that, you know, nobody really knows how to handle it now. We're supportive, but, you know, nobody wants to get too involved because it seems like it's always something.
Well, but the always something is called somatoform disorder, where people are – their body is a source of danger and misery and all kinds of things. And so they keep looking for solutions when, in fact, the real problem is that they're – literally the way trauma works, particularly when it's on your body, you keep reliving it every minute of every day. It's as though it's always happening to you. Even though you're not aware that's what's happening, that's sort of what your brain is perceiving. And so – Your conscious brain is looking around for a solution to that. Like, why is this happening? I must be sick. There must be something wrong. When in fact, it's just the trauma. And if you can get at the trauma and get that properly treated, the whole thing tends to settle down. Okay?
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You betcha. This is Abby. What's up, Abby?
Hi.
What's going on?
Nothing. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah.
I think I've heard you mention before your opinions on life coaching. And I am in a circle with a person who is a very recent life coach, and I have my LCSW, and so I have some hesitations about her providing this kind of what seems to me like therapy to some women, and I just kind of want to get your thoughts on it.
Okay, so licensed clinical social workers make very well-trained for real therapists, right? I mean, you guys are trained in cognitive behavioral therapy, you're trained in emotion focus therapy, you know how to do therapy, right?
Right, the whole game.
The whole game. You guys are good at it. You know how to do it. And that's the real deal. And that is so for people with even moderate psychopathology or mild psychopathology, I want them seeing you, right? You're going to go to it. But if it's somebody who either A, is not a good therapy candidate, and you and I both know that lots of people are that way, or are not ready and really stuck on some behaviors that if they could get through, like, you know, hoarding, something like that, specific behavioral things that might even get them to the point where they'll start to maybe take a look more honestly at things that can bring them back to somebody like you.
Okay.
That point where the behavior change needs to be done. I've seen some life coaches do some real good there. I've seen them really help. So I would just say, you know, my concern is many of them are non-professionally trained. They don't really understand what they're dealing with sometimes in, you know, whoever the identified patient is. and they think that, you know, positivity and coaching is going to get somebody through. And it's like, oh, I've seen some real problems with that too.
Right.
So
right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's kind of my concern, is if someone comes along that has some actual, some deeper issues.
Yeah.
You know, if that could be kind of even more harmful to have this person kind of helping them, quote unquote, guide.
Yeah, it's harmful in that it ends up being, okay, now I'm going to sort of talk in a little shorthand for you.
Uh-huh.
You know, when the patients are kind of manipulative and self-willful, and you know, the patient can be, the life coach can be sort of enabling of all that. They become
right.
They become part of the process of whatever's maintaining the pathology. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I've seen that happen a lot with drug addicts or people, you know, recently off drug, or people with, you know, real access, what we used to call access two disorders. That's where they get sucked into the vortex and may not understand they're there.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're you know, you got it. You know what this is.
I do. Yeah. Any suggestions or thoughts on how to kind of, so again, this person is in a circle of friends of mine, and I think it's a pride issue whenever she talks about this kind of stuff. But
I would just stay positive.
Yeah.
And just go, I take care of sick people, and and I, you know, if I needed help, you know, motivating to do fill in the blank, boy, I sure wish I had a life coach. Because the coaching, you got to emphasize, the coaching is the key part. They coach. And, you know, having an available other that really coaches you, I mean, that's a helpful thing in many, many situations. So I don't want to undermine what they do. I just always, you know, the same concern you have is that when people are undertrained, they don't quite know who they should be coaching sometimes. So ideally, you should be the one referring them.
Right. Okay. Right? Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Good luck. Sometimes the coaches are professionally trained too, and so people will get, you know, somebody like the woman I was just talking to in the LCSW will also get some coaching training, so they have that as part of their range of what they can offer. So, and I've seen, you know, people get very enthusiastic about that. Liz, go ahead. Liz, what's up?
Yes. Hi.
Hey.
Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
Sorry, I'm nervous, but 13 to 14 years ago, I had a lot of pain, and long story short, they prescribed me pain medication, up to, because it wasn't working. So I became addicted. I am an addict. And they started me on the Suboxone program about 10 years ago to get off Vicodin specifically. And I started off at a really high dose, and since a couple years ago, I was able to get it down to about 4 milligrams a day, which is really low compared to what I was taking.
Okay.
But anyway, at the start of the program, it was you would be off within 6 months and all of that.
Look, they never get people off it. It's just ridiculous. But go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm still on it. It's been
literally are phobic of having you go through some discomfort. It's so weird. Here are words that never came out of my mouth. 25 years of treating opiate addicts. Here are the words that never came out of my mouth. How are we going to deal with this opiate withdrawal? I have nothing after. We got to have something for opiate withdrawal. 25 years, I never had any problem getting somebody off heroin or any other opiate. Never. No problem.
Right.
No big deal. And all of a sudden, the whole medical community decided you got to be on this and you got to stay on this.
Right.
And now it's a problem. Now, my question for you, Liz, is do you think you're a full-on addict? Like old school?
I am.
Old school addict. Okay.
I am.
All right.
I used to smoke cigarettes, alcohol. I try not to touch alcohol as much as possible. Yeah.
All right. So
I am.
Okay. So you're an addict.
And I think that's the problem. They corner you, you know, in the doctor's office and say, this ends now. You take this or you have nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind
I know.
Of in that
I go.
Position. And now they're saying, well, some people have to be on it for maintenance for a long time.
Well, you've been on it a long time. You've been on it 8 years.
So
that's my question. Do you still feel altered by it?
I don't feel altered by it at all. At least I don't think so. I don't feel drowsy. It doesn't give me a high or anything like that. I'm able to take doses and keep with them, unlike I did with pain medication, you know, where I would just keep on taking more and more.
Right.
Yeah. And would lie about my prescription being out and all of that. And so that's where it has done, I feel like, a lot of good.
Okay.
You know, I lost my job. I have a job. I have kids.
Yeah.
I'm in a graduate program.
Okay.
You know, but I always kind of find excuses for not going into recovery, you know, because I'm like, how will I do that, being working full time and being a mom and
by into recovery, so, you mean abstinence, or do you mean going to a program? Or what do you mean when you say into recovery?
Into a program.
Do you going do? Did you program. Did you or do you do 12-step treatment?
I don't. I tried doing it, and I was put into NA, and I'm kind of in a really small town, and it just didn't feel right, if that makes sense. But I think that it's something that I should check into more.
Yeah, I think before you do anything, you need that kind of support around you, because you'll find other people who've been through similar stuff as you're going through here, and you need to kind of hear people's stories. You need to find out what's available in your community. You don't have to go to NA. It'd be nice if you went there, but you could go to AA. You could go to other mutual aid societies, smart recovery, things like that. There's women's support groups sometimes you can find. So look for other what are called mutual aid societies. Look it up online and go. And then start to talk about, you know, you might be able to – what happens when you go to 2 milligrams? Are the withdrawals overwhelming? Are you able to function?
They're not overwhelming. No, they are just uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know,
so
when I
maybe
able
with,
to go down.
Maybe with support and with people around you, maybe you can just do that. Go down to 2 and see how you do.
Yeah.
This may not be a situation where you have to go necessarily somewhere and go cold turkey, because if you do, it's a 2-week kind of pretty miserable 2 weeks to go to zero all of a sudden. It's pretty nasty.
Right.
And you can kind of taper from here a little bit, but do it with support, you know, of the fellowship, people around you. Raise your hand, maybe get a sponsor.
And I do have a very supportive husband, sorry to interrupt you. Very thankful for that. So he is just supportive no matter where I'm at.
And here's the thing. That's a plan, and it's a plan that seems reasonable, and I'm suggesting it to you because that seems to be what you want, and it's what I would want for you and what I would want for myself if I were you, because you don't know. Maybe it's affecting your mood or your libido or your – who knows what. It'd be nice to be free and clear of all this once and for all.
Yes, it would.
You may be one of these people that needs to stay on a little bit indefinitely. That's possible. And you got to kind of look at that. You got to be prepared for that and sort of discuss that with your physicians as well, okay?
Yeah, because I do get scared about relapsing, you know.
Right, and, that's right.
Just kind of turning around and my life.
You will relapse if you do nothing. If you just stop or if you stop or taper yourself and don't create some support around you. That's when it gets dangerous, okay?
Okay.
All right. Just kind of take it easy. Don't be in a panic about it. You're a great story. It's gone well.
Thank you.
Keep that positive mental attitude about what you're doing here, and see what how your peers support you and what they've done. Okay.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that, because my husband and I have listened to other calls you have, and you know he comes to me when he hears a call that I haven't heard and says, you know, this isn't good. You know, the doctor, he has heard some of the advice you've given, and so
I will get kind of harsh when somebody's on 32 milligrams, they're doing nothing, they've been slipping and sliding around forever, and it's like, really, that's supposed to help that person? Come on now.
Yeah.
And they have unmotivated, and they're, by the way, chipping on other things while they're taking the Suboxone. That's when I lose my mind then, because whoever is prescribing the Suboxone is not doing that person any good service. That person should be screened randomly for drugs. They should be in a support program. There's lots of things need to be done other than prescribing Suboxone, and that's when I get a little crazy. So,
yeah, of course. All right. And I am drug screened, just by the way.
I have been for all 10 years. Do you have a case or something? Or does the doctor do that?
No, just the doctor. It's a part of the program.
Well, but here's what
I don't have.
But
do they
good? Do they screen you for everything or just opiates?
That's a good question.
Well, ask them. They should
everything.
Screen.
I don't take anything else.
I understand,
so
we've established you're a drug addict. You should be screened for everything.
Right.
Every time you go in. That drives me crazy that they don't do that, because something like 80% of Suboxone patients take other drugs. And that's not good.
And they do ask if you've had alcohol, and I'm honest. You know, I have one or two a week, you know. So I am honest about when I've had alcohol. So
yeah, but,
I'm
but
guessing
look,
it's not everything.
If you're an addict, you're not fully honest. You're just not.
True.
And so the fact that they even ask you that is, you got to be kidding me. That's part of the condition, right? And so, And now that may have to go too if you're prepared. That's all you got to really clean it up. If you want. You're still a good story such as you are, okay?
Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate you taking my call.
You got to take care. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Mike. What's up, Mike?
Hey, what's up, Dr. Drew?
What's going on?
Question. I was wondering if, you know, if being, what would cause a child to, I guess, be sexually abusive to an adult or make advances on an adult? Would that child being sexually abused as, you know, as a young child be a precursor of that?
What age and what are we talking about here?
Specifically, like, I don't know, 8 or 9, and a sleeping relative next to the child.
The child does what?
The child, I guess, touches the adult. Touches the aunt.
So a male 8-year-old touches a female.
Yes.
Something's wrong. I would definitely get that kid evaluated right away.
Okay.
I mean, I can't say for sure a childhood sexual abuse, but that's not normal.
That's not a typical impulse of a child to.
No. I mean, if he was asleep or something.
Like a movie or TV wouldn't
influence that. No. Not an 8-year-old. No.
Okay.
No, something's not right. Now, I don't know what, but something ain't kosher there. This is the aunt lying with the nephew, is that right?
Yeah.
And the nephew started just feeling around?
It was me. I was the child. Probably when I was 8 or 9. Just a sleeping aunt next to me, and I don't know what would cause me or drive me to do something like that, because I think of that now, and yeah. It's disgusting. I don't know what.
Well, let me tell you one of the things. Maybe, first of all, maybe you're older than that. If you were 12 or something, it would have a different thing, different implication, number one. Number two, were you living in chaos?
No. I had a great childhood. I don't have any clear memories of any type of abuse, physical, sexual, anything.
You sure you didn't just dream this?
Yeah, no, I'm sure.
Did it happen more than once?
No, but I do remember, I guess, trying to coerce kids my age, too.
Right. Maybe a child did something to you?
I mean, not to my knowledge, nothing.
Okay.
Nothing more than, I guess, a friend's older sister trying to kiss me or something like that.
Right. And is it possible the aunt was duplicitous in this in some way? I mean, why didn't she immediately report it? Why didn't she?
She didn't know. Still doesn't.
She was asleep.
Yes.
All right. Again, this all is sort of in the if there is such a thing as sexual abuse light, but the, you know, something probably happened child on child. You probably, right. You know, went from there. And you okay now? Everything, your relationship?
Yeah,
okay,
I've got a good job. Single, but I date around. I can hold a relationship.
Okay.
I don't see any issues or anything.
Right. Then good.
It's just weird that that's a memory of mine, and I don't know what
I would think in terms of other children affecting you and just go, oh, my gosh, look, maybe that was a part of what did that. And stop blaming yourself. You were 8. You know what I mean? Stop doing that. You're an 8-year-old responding to something, and I don't know why. I think with time you may be able to think about it and remember it, but stop it. Okay, you're an 8-year-old.
Right.
It's okay to forgive an 8-year-old for responding normally to an abnormal stimulus, right?
Right.
All right.
And you know, everything being good now.
That shows you that things are. It's not something to really be that concerned about. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
All right.
You're the man. Thanks.
Bye. You may have seen me talking about a product called TheraWorks Relief, and if you are one of the millions of Americans who suffer from muscle cramps in your legs and feet, this is relief. And now we're starting to get testimonials coming in, and I'm really proud of this product. It's a way of getting relief from muscle cramps, which is something that can really make people suffer and disrupt your sleep. And sometimes older patients can really be a burden, and it's doing it without taking a pill. TheraWorks Relief is a topical foam that's clinically proven to relieve muscle cramps fast. And with daily use, TheraWorks Relief can even prevent muscle cramps before they start. Now, for over a year, I've been recommending TheraWorks Relief to my family and friends and some patients as well. And my patients have been passing it on to other people. I didn't ask them to do that, but they've been doing it. Now, the word breakthrough gets tossed around easily these days, but TheraWorks Relief is the real deal. It's a life-changing product, and best of all, you don't need a prescription. TheraWorks Relief is my choice for preventing and relieving muscle cramps. Make it yours, too. Get TheraWorks Relief today at select CVS, Rite Aid, and Walgreens pharmacies, or at TheraWorksRelief.com. That's TheraWorksRelief.com, TheraWorksRelief.com. And talk to your pharmacist about TheraWorks Relief. They're as happy as I am because you don't have to take a pill. pill. Experience relief for muscle cramps for yourself. That is TheraWorks Relief for your muscle cramps. All right, you heard me talk about Quip. This is not the first time, right? It's something you use every day. It makes a boring part of your day enjoyable, and you don't have to go to the store to get it because Quip ships directly to your door. It's that perfect $25 product, and it is the right thing, and it is supported by professionals. Quip starts at just $25, and right now when you go to GetQuip, G-E-T-Q-U-I-P, getquip.com/Drew, get your first refill pack with a Quip electronic toothbrush. You get the free refill pack for free. That is your first refill pack for free at getquip.com/Drew. Again, Quip comes with a mount. You know it. It's a new electric toothbrush that packs the right amount of vibrations into an ultra-slim design, guiding pulses to simplify better brushing. This is the future. Adam always talks about there being no advances in dentistry. Well, this is an advance. It also offers that optional subscription plan, delivering new brush heads on a dentist-recommended 3-month schedule for just $5, including free shipping worldwide. That's it. Get Quip Toothbrush. Again, it's getquip.com/Drew. Hey, we have Lynette Carolla on the horn. What's going on?
Hi, Dr. Drew.
What's up, Lynette?
I've never talked through the glass like this before.
It's kind of cool, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I just had a quick question because you sort of know my family background.
Yeah.
And Natalia is 12 years old this week.
Yeah.
And she's been going to therapy. Yeah. And I talk to the therapist a lot on a regular basis about her. And Natalia and my mother are a lot alike.
Mm.
And my brother has full-blown schizophrenia, mm-hmm. as you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, I guess, had it, but never showed signs until later in life.
I always thought she was more bipolar, no?
Yeah, she was bipolar. But she was, at the very first time we had her hospitalized, she was seeing Jesus on the walls.
Yeah, but bipolar.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she was bipolar. And so what I'm asking is, Natalia,
yeah.
is there markers? Is there...
Like tests, blood tests or something?
Well, that, yes. And what to look for. And, you know, I know that also if you have the gene and you're genetically predisposed,
yes.
your environment can also, if it's,
yes.
it's stressful.
So, yes, correct. Mm-hmm. So what have you been reading lately?
What have I been reading? Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I know about this stuff.
Okay.
And I've been in touch with her therapist.
Okay, good. And what is the therapist recommending?
Well, the therapist... I just started talking to her about my family
yeah.
history. But the therapist says a lot of things that Natalia does that my mother, everything's fine, Natalia says.
Yeah.
Everything's fine. No, I'm fine.
Well,
you know.
Of course, a child has no insight. There's no way.
That's
no way.
Hot, right.
Yeah.
So,
But that was your mom saying everything's fine.
That was my mom.
Yeah, well, your mom, that was different. Mm-hmm. That is, don't equate an adult and a 10-year-old. Don't do that. Or 11.
Okay.
What are they? Are they 11 now, 12?
They're turning 12.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Don't do that.
Okay.
But in terms of insight and that kind of thing. No,
okay.
No, no. Okay.
Yeah. I mean,
because what you're going to see now is 12 to 15 and 15 to 18, they don't have insight any more than they do now, but they'll start acting out whatever's going on. They'll
mm-hmm.
start externalizing.
Mm-hmm.
And girls sometimes internalize.
Right.
Eating things, cutting things, that kind of stuff.
So, right. I don't know. I just, it's worrying me.
Does she get depressed?
She does not get depressed. She's like my mom. My mom never got depressed. My mom, everything was good. Everything is happy. Everything's great.
Except when your mom got out of spun out, when she got manic. How was she?
When she got manic, she would,
no. Except when she was not manic.
When she was not manic,
yeah.
She was happy. Everything was good. She would go
just
work.
Just energetic.
Energetic,
yeah.
And she would not take medication.
Right.
Because she never takes – she doesn't need an aspirin. Why should she need medication?
Right. Right. She had boundless energy and she was –
right. And Natalia does. But
– okay. So the main thing is you're doing everything right, which is the main thing is emotional health, right? Attend to that and make sure somebody's managing. But there's a really kind of a critical piece that at least I'm impressed by this literature and I've seen it many, many times. Somewhere around 18 to 22, right, maybe 18 to 24 is when shit happens, right? That's when the major mental illnesses present themselves.
My brother.
Right. And in manic bipolar, if you can prevent a manic episode then, you've done a lot. You've done a lot to reduce the risk going forward. And now whether that's taking medication during that window, like a mood stabilizer, or just and not doing drugs. I mean, that's going to be a critical thing, you know, for her brain. Not doing stimulants, not doing drugs, not drinking. You know, that's going to mm-hmm. be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to kind of educate her about it. Like, look, this is a thing. You know, is there alcoholism in your family anywhere? Is
no that, alcoholism.
Yeah. So you have to worry about addiction, but we're worried about your brain health and your emotional health. And if you want to drink when you're 25, fine, or 23, fine. But you know, it's really be careful. Be very, very careful with anything of any excess, because they think of it as sort of a kindling phenomenon. By kindling, I mean, like, you know, when you take some kindling of wood and you light the fire,
yeah,
it starts to spread. That's kind of the way mania is during that age group. It kindles and it can spread. And it doesn't do that so much when they're younger, and right now you're not going to see that kind of thing. You're just going to see the energy and the maybe right. the lability and stuff. Or is there irritability too, or no?
Not anything
unusual. Yeah. Right. And but that you don't want that kindling to set fire in 18 to 22. Mm-hmm. That is to me a really critical thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see anything like it, just you got to medicate it. I think personally,
medicate. Yeah. But starting at age 18.
My thing is 18 to 23, 22, 18. In there. Just but you know, a really good psychiatrist would be able to manage that. No problem. You're doing everything right. You're paying attention to it. You're being honest about it. You're being realistic mm-hmm. about it. You got a good therapist in there. It's good.
But so
it's good. They say, listen, here. I want you to flip it around a little bit. All this stuff that we look at as parents, we worry about, and like, oh my God, it's mental illness, blah, blah, blah. Those are the things that make people great.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, I'm like your husband now. But I mean, anybody that really accomplished stuff in this world has something going on psychologically or psychiatrically. They really do. Mm-hmm. It's just not letting it become disabling or really where it breaks into illness.
I see.
That's the key. It can be just a proclivity, a trait that, you know, can has associated with illness, but just you want to make it keep it from becoming the illness.
Okay. So between age 12 and 18, just no drugs.
I think more in terms of emotional health then.
Emotional health.
Yeah, which is what you're attending to.
Okay.
Yeah, like
okay.
you said, no stress and, you know, okay. proper, you know, just having a therapist. It's good. Okay. Does she like the therapist?
She loves it.
Yeah, perfect.
She loves it.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
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 What does the therapist tell you? She positive?
She's very positive, yeah, and yeah. she's straightforward with her because yeah, there
but,
she's.
But she feels good about Natalia and the way things are going.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah. Definitely. And we stay in contact constantly.
I'm telling you,
me.
Mental health services bears fruit. Every time you use it, you'll be happy you did. We yeah. use it all the time with our kids yeah. and stuff. So.
Okay. All right. Thank
so
you.
The thing I'm always so, so thankful for if the kids are open to it and then participate, because that's your blessing. Because so many kids are resistant or don't want it or won't go or go but don't do anything. That's – you can't do anything about that. It's very hard.
No, she's very
– That's Adam.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that – I know. Yeah, but that from Natalia, she loves it.
I have a whole conversation I got to have with somebody about him and sleeping medication.
Why?
I'm going to have it on ACS, I think. Is he getting sleep medicine from anybody else but me?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, good. All right, good. Every single shit. Oh, my God, he put me through hell.
Huh? What did he
put me through hell.
He did?
Yes.
Yeah, I witnessed some of this.
You witnessed some of it?
What happened?
Well, at one point, Drew wrote the prescription.
No, I made the mistake of on a Adam and Drew show going, you know, Adam was talking about his travel coming up. I said, well, make sure you attend to that. He goes, the AMI doesn't work. I go, well, there's other stuff. There's this long-acting thing. There's, you know, Restoril-like medication. He goes, get me some of that. I go, that is not appropriate. That is not okay. I'm going to get a real doctor to do it. I'm going to have Dr. Bruce do it. So, okay, have Dr. Bruce. Fine. Well, no. Bruce set a boundary, I guess, which I was impressed by. But yeah. then all guns blazing came towards me.
Hmm.
And what did you perceive after that?
Oh, well, there was some back and forth about the dosage that you had written it for and the fact that
right.
he had to take two and he was not happy about that.
Right. As though taking two or three is somehow
– Why is that? What's wrong with that?
Because that's getting the dose exactly right for him.
He apparently would – the way he said it was he would rather break a pill in half.
It's a capsule. It doesn't break.
Yeah. I'm just that's reporting.
My, that's my point.
Repeating.
And so I was like – there's plenty that – I can't believe I shouldn't be doing this in the first place, and now we're into this.
Oh my God!
Oh, and then it got worse. I'm gonna have it out on ACS.
Oh
God. That's the beginning. That's the beginning. It was so bizarre.
Well, I'm not shocked actually. That's par for the course, Dr. Drew.
Oh my goodness!
Thank you.
All right, good. I'm glad you asked that question. That's great. I'm glad she's in good hands.
Yes.
That's good news.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Drew.
You bet.
Love you.
All right, so let's go to Dave. What's up there, Dave?
Dr. Drew, how you doing?
Hey, Dave, what's happening?
Well, brief history.
Well, let me
I'm
let me.
50.
Yeah, you had enough alcohol yet? Are you done?
Yeah.
You're done?
Well, no.
No, you're not done. Well, when you're done, no. When you're done drinking, I'll just go online, get a number for AA, and have someone come pick you up and take you to a meeting.
Well, I just have a question for you. Okay, brief history. I'm 50. Up until 2011, I was a casual drinker. Okay, 2011, I had bariatric surgery. And
you know, that's a I've had a number of people whose alcoholism exploded after bariatric surgery. It's something about the way the alcohol gets delivered to the small bowel and then how quickly it gets to your brain to just boom. So sorry,
right.
Dave. I'm sorry that happened to you.
Yeah. And, you know, and so basically I drink every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's cheap vodka and mix it with whatever and everything. And now I've heard you talk on, you know, ADS about, you know, quitting cold turkey is not a good idea.
No, you got to get treatment. Or at least get a doctor to help you through it, you know, somehow. It's especially acute. This is a dangerous thing with the bariatric surgery and stuff and alcohol. My experience in treating it, I have a moderate amount of experience with several patients, and it's treacherous. It's not the usual thing, you know, because you guys, I don't know. It just has lots more, it's much more difficult. That's all I can tell you. You got to get where the magnesium metabolism is harder to get squared. The vitamin B issues, sometimes I worry those are going to be more problematic. They usually turn out okay. The way you metabolize the medication that we give you to help you with the withdrawal can be a little treacherous. So it's just not your usual thing. It's possible. It's no big deal, but it needs to be carefully managed. That's all I'm saying.
Well, you know, I take, you know, since my bariatric surgery, I take a you know, multivitamin every day.
I know, but you don't absorb it. You don't absorb it when you're drinking. Or you may not absorb it. And again, that's the stuff that's your doctor gets to worry about when they're taking you off the alcohol. So, listen, man, you deal with it. Come on now. Let's go. Let's get honest about it. You didn't ask for this, but you got it. And let's get you all the way out of this mess.
But, okay, so what I'm asking is, I mean, I'm that type of person, you know, when I quit smoking cold turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was fine with it.
Well, then if you can find I've never met that person yet with alcohol. That's as far down the road as you are. And I have, obviously, with people that are in control still, sort of. But if you can find a doctor to help manage your withdrawal, then fine. Then do it. But don't do it alone. Don't do it alone. Okay? Please.
All right.
All right, buddy. Good luck, man. Tyler.
Hey, what's up?
What's going on?
So I was born with spina bifida.
Mm-hmm.
And I was lucky that I wasn't paralyzed.
All right, so let's just tell people what spina bifida is. Spina bifida is essentially your spine doesn't close all the way, and there's different kinds of spina bifida, but sometimes it's occult, you don't even know you have it, and sometimes it's overt where you actually see the spinal cord.
Right.
What kind did you have?
Well, I had a myelomeningocele.
Okay, so you had a little bit of a problem there. Okay.
So everything was good up until I was about 14, 15, and I started having trouble urinating.
Did they repair it?
Yeah, they repaired it at first.
Yeah, okay.
And then, so I had some MRIs and stuff like that, and they saw that I had a tethered spine. So I guess it didn't grow properly, as I grew my spine,
kind of stuck down, okay, yeah.
And then I'm trying to think. I just had a brain fart. I'm sorry, I'm nervous.
All right, no problem.
So I couldn't, I still couldn't go to the bathroom properly. And then I had a metrophenol surgery done about a year after my back surgery, which is basically, they use my appendix to make a port.
Yep.
That goes through my belly button. So I use a catheter to pee out of that, and everything's fine, but the problem is I still don't have much bladder control, and I've been taking oxybutynin to kind of help with that, and it helps somewhat, but, you know, I have to wear diapers a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused. I'm a little confused. You have drainage both from the catheter and from your penis?
Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
So it comes out of my penis, like, kind of uncontrollably.
Hmm.
Which, yeah, it's odd for me, too.
Yeah, well, it's because you don't have normal bladder control, right? Essentially, there's a muscle at the neck of the bladder that we learn to tighten. It's a smooth muscle. And for whatever reason, mm-hmm. that is not tightening for you. You're not able to because that part of your spinal column isn't working. And so it just leaves it sort of open. So as urine comes in, it just flows right out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I had a test recently, and they found that my inferior sphincter wasn't closing. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yep, yep, yeah. Yep. And
so I was just wondering, my urologist recently suggested a sling, which I think it's something that, like, just stays in your penis for life, basically.
A surgical, building a sling on the neck.
Yeah.
Yeah, The it's not a big deal surgically. My fear is it won't work, but it might, if you're in good hands. Where do you go? Do you go to a university center to get your urological care?
Children.
Okay.
Nationwide Children.
All right. So yeah, you might think about that. I mean, it might help. It certainly won't make things worse, and it probably will make things better, but it might not make it go away, if that makes sense.
Right.
Is that what they told you, or?
No, I haven't had my appointment yet. I just had an over the phone call. But
yeah, go get into it a little bit. It's not that big a deal. I you know, for you, I understand a 19-year-old male. This is all confusing and weird, and, you know, difficult to contend with. And you'd want to have as much of those symptoms controlled as possible. And so, to me, that seems like a not too big an intervention for something that might give you some relief. Okay.
Okay.
All right. All right, Tyler. Good luck, man.
Okay.
All right.
All right, thanks for taking my question.
You bet it. Bye.
Okay.
Really good calls today. Good questions. Wide-ranging. I like that. I dig that. So that about does it. I appreciate you all for tuning in and for calling in and being a part of this. And as always, we appreciate when you share it with a friend. And I'll see you next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.
Rack your look for spring at Nordstrom Rack and save up to 60% on brands you love. Rag & Bone, Vince, Marc Jacobs, Adidas, Joe's, and more. Great brands, great prices every day at Nordstrom Rack. Score new dresses, denim, sandals, designer bags, and sunglasses, plus updates for the family and home. Get your spring on for less, up to 60% less, today at your Nordstrom Rack store. What will you find?
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.